Hey everyone, this is Graham from Guru Focus. If you haven't met me already, I run our Value Investing Live series on YouTube. The podcast you're about to listen to was originally recorded live in front of an audience, so our guests may make references to charts and PowerPoint slides that you won't be able to see here. If you want to check out their full presentation, including those slides, or join our next live stream, click on the link down in the description. Now back to the podcast. Alrighty, welcome everyone to Value Investing Live. Today we are pleased to feature Cesar Bryan, manager of the GAMCO International Growth Fund and the Gabelli Gold Fund. He is a member of the Global Investment Team, which is responsible for the GAMCO Global Growth Fund and the GAMCO Global Opportunity Fund. In addition to these roles, he is on the management team of the GAMCO Global Gold and Natural Resources and Income Trusts and GAMCO Natural Resources Gold and Income, two of the firm's closed-end funds. As always, please feel free to post your questions and comments throughout the presentation in that chat section over there on YouTube, but keep in mind, all of these questions will be held until we get to the end of the presentation and we go ahead and jump into the Q&A section. And without further ado, I'm pleased to present you Cesar Bryan. We'll let him go ahead and kick off the presentation.
Great, thanks Graham, very much, and thank you all for tuning in. What I thought I would do today is just talk a little bit about gold and our approach to gold stocks. And you can see from this slide that I have a partner, a colleague, Chris Mancini, who's the dedicated gold analyst for this strategy. So you know, he knows everything. I know a lot about very little, and of course, the analyst knows a lot about a lot. So you've got me today. So if you have any questions later or comments, you know, of course, feel free to contact myself or my colleague Chris Mancini. Next slide, please. I have another colleague, Chris, who's in charge of the slides. I think the decision was taken that it was too much for me to talk and move the slides. So Chris is going to do the slides, and I'll do some of the talking. So today, just comment on the gold price, where we think gold companies, how they're doing, a little bit about valuations, and a couple of stocks and stories that we own in our portfolio. Next, Chris. You know, this is the bull market, which has been in existence for gold and gold stocks since 2016. And I just want to make a couple of points. So one is that that since the mid-80s, I mean, for a long time, gold equities through 2000 really did nothing and massively underperformed both treasuries and regular stocks. And since 2016, well, actually, since the year 2000, gold has outperformed. The gold price has outperformed, I believe, treasuries and the S&P. But since 2016, there's been a solid outperformance by both gold and the gold equities relative to fixed income and the general stock market. So we're in a bull market. We think we're in early days, certainly in the gold equity bull market. Just the other point to make is that the prior high in gold was just over 1900, about 1920 or so, $1,920, you know, all the way back in September 2011. So on a real basis, gold is certainly not at a new high. Next slide, Chris. This gives me an opportunity to demystify gold. In some respects, gold's a tough subject or investment opportunity. Well, it's not really an investment, but to discuss. And I think that may be because it was illegal for U.S. citizens to own monetary gold until 1975. So it wasn't something that was really spoken about much prior to 1975. That happened, of course, in 1933 under President Roosevelt. So what I've done here is just simply to show or already to illustrate what J.P. Morgan said, and that is gold is money, nothing else, back in 1910 or so. So how I've done that is just to show gold as the constant and how the dollars moved relative to gold. So on the August 15th, 1971, when President Nixon took the U.S. off the gold standard, the official price of gold was $35, but the unofficial price, or where gold was traded, was about $43. So $1,000 would have bought you over 23 ounces of gold back in 71. At the end of June, with gold at 1781, you could have bought just a little over half an ounce of gold. So that actually represents a dollar depreciation of 97.6%, and actually it's worse now. So gold isn't actually an investment, it's just money. And it's the equivalent really of a fiat currency. It just sits there. No income, no risk, and always liquid. Next slide, please. So just a couple of slides, which you've all seen, it just is a prop for me to make a couple of points. And of course, we have zero interest rates, and the Fed has said that that's going to be the case for a while. But the point here I really want to make is that the Fed seems to be expanding its mandate, or expanding its mandate may be the wrong word, but expanding its involvement in the economy. And what I mean by this is, if you look back to a few decades ago, really they manipulated. I mean, they controlled short-term interest rates. Then that expanded and became clear or obvious during the financial crisis, where the Fed embarked on a very large asset purchase program. And what's happened in this crisis is the Fed has moved further and is really acting together with the fiscal authorities in a number of programs and schemes that they've come up with in the last few months. So there's been a gradual sort of greater involvement, as we've progressed. Now, is that important? Maybe not. But could it feed into an eroding confidence in the Fed, in the future? And I just want to highlight on this chart in 2019, in September 2019, when the Fed, prior to the crisis, when the Fed actually purchased or injected about $400 billion of cash to shore up the repo market. That just illustrates the fragility of the financial system prior to the COVID-19. Crisis, which took hold, of course, back in February and March. So with the Fed, greater and greater involvement, the risk is more malinvestment. If there's no cost of money, there's no risk-free rate, and on the one side, and distortions, and then on the other side, of course, savers and those. Beneficiaries of pension plans, of course, pay the price. So there is a cost to this policy. Next slide. Again, we've all seen this. Nothing new here. I think this just gives me an opportunity to make a couple of points. One is that coming out of the Second World War, when debt was at a similar level that it is now. The Fed engineered interest rates less than the rate of inflation. So it's a long period of negative interest rates, negative real rates, I should say. So nominal yields were much higher than the rate of inflation. And this, of course, allowed the real burden of the debt to be reduced over a period of time. So we could be moving into a similar situation now. By looking forward, real rates will be negative, and that's a way of lessening the real burden of debt. And negative real rates are, we think, positive for gold. So that's really my you know, Gold comments. I'm sure there's, we've all heard broadly the similar things, but you know, that's our sort of stance towards Gold, that it could be an interesting portfolio diversifier for investment portfolios. Next, now we're going to talk a little bit about the gold equities. Chris, the next slide. Oh, thanks. Yeah. Okay. So, just a couple of comments about you know, current earnings and where we are now. Obviously, the main driver is the gold price and to these gold stocks. And you know, back in the March quarter, gold was 1,300. You know, now it's over 1,900. And so, you know, that's the main driver of revenue. So that's very, very positive for these companies. They have been affected by the COVID crisis. But remember, for a mining company or resource company, a production interruption is just a delay of revenues, not necessarily lost revenues. Now they have, so to the extent that production's been shut down, yes, it's raised costs a little bit, but that production generally hasn't been lost and will come back at some point. There were actually quite limited production cutbacks. I mean, it could have been worse than it was. It was scattered across various different geographies. I would say South America was probably hardest hit, and some of the mines in Canada were shut down where communities, reasonably remote communities, were very fearful of the virus coming into their community. So companies, you know, closed down operations. But most of them are now back and running. I think Hochschild Immaculata mine was one of the last, and that came online a few days ago. Now, local currency changes. When this is less relevant now, but at the depth of the crisis, the dollar was very strong, and the Australian dollar and the Canadian dollar were weak, and other currencies where a lot of our portfolio companies mine gold were actually quite weak, which raises the profitability of those operations. That's largely been mitigated at this point, but generally a strong dollar improves the profitability of most of the portfolio companies, certainly the we own, because production is outside of the US. So local currency costs are lessened, while of course local currency revenues with a higher dollar and higher gold price improve profitability. With, you know, in terms of input costs, there were some shortages of reagents, but you know, the oil price is sharply lower. You know, oil, you know, depending on the locality and the power source, you know, oil can be an important, or diesel, you know, input costs for mines, and that's lower. That's helpful for profitability. And companies have had to deal with you know, increased costs in terms of the movement of people and other costs associated with local communities, which of course we've read a lot about. So, you know, overall net neutral. We don't think it's been hugely impactful for the industry as a whole, the COVID crisis. Next slide. So, relative to the market, you know, we think these the gold sector, the gold equities, are actually relatively inexpensive. And what we've shown here is a sort of a run rate at around about 9 at the current price of gold. You know, what free cash flow could be expected on this year's production. So this isn't a necessarily a forecast of what's going to happen this year, but at a constant price, what's the earning ability of some, you know, of four companies. So we've chosen, you know, the two largest cap companies in the sector, Barrick Gold and Newmont. They both have a similar market cap of about $54 billion. They each have a little bit of net debt. You can see here the free cash flow yield is, you know, for both of them, you know, well over 5%. And And those are outside of the royalty companies, the large cap companies are the most highly valued in the gold sector. We've then chosen, you know, a couple of, sort of basically random actually, a couple of other portfolio holdings of the fund. And you know, one is B2 Gold, which is about a 7 billion market cap, Canadian-based producer. And we show there, you know, similar. And that's a highly valued, they've had a good growth profile. Another, Dundee Precious Metal, you know, much smaller company with a couple of mines in Bulgaria, funnily enough. And we can show, you know, really interesting sort of free cash flow yield at the current price. And some of the smaller mid-cap companies are maybe not as cheap as this company, but certainly with free cash flow yields well in excess of 10%. So we think that stacks up positively relative to the rest of the equity market. Now, next slide, please. This is really an important point that I'd like to make, and that is that we believe that gold equities in the current gold price environment or a better environment will be able to generate pretty strong returns of cash to shareholders. Again, just we've taken the four companies that we showed in the prior slide. And two were Barrick and Newmont have been paying a dividend, and we can show you here how those payouts have changed over last year. So you know, Barrick just announced a dividend hike, and now on an annualized basis is 28 cents, a return, current return of 1%, which isn't, you know, that interesting, but it certainly is almost twice the 10-year Treasury. And Newmont last year, I believe, raised their annual payout to $1 a share, which is 1.5%. Now, these two, B2 Gold and Dundee, just initiated payouts, and you can see them here, 5 cents and 8 cents respectively. And again, you know, their dividend yield at the current share price about 0.8 and 1.1%. Now, there are companies that have much bigger payouts. I mean, a position in the portfolio, Centamin, has, which is a London-based gold miner, has about a 4% yield, and there are others in Australia which have a greater current return than we've shown in these examples. But the point is, these companies are going to be generating lots of free cash, and one of the options they have is to increase the payouts to shareholders. And we would, I think, prefer to do it through dividends than through share buybacks. But, you know, maybe there'll be some managements that choose that route, as well as, you know, as well as raising their payouts to shareholders. We think this is really an important driver, and we want managements to not obviously to increase debt levels or anything to pay out, but the extent they've got free cash to reward long-suffering shareholders, I should say. Anyway, certainly long-term shareholders have been long-suffering shareholders in this sector. So this, I think, is an important driver, income from gold equities in basically what is a low to zero rate world. Next slide, please. I've just chosen, courtesy of Scotiabank, just one valuation metric, because, you know, just going through slide after slide of valuation gets a little tedious. Maybe got so this is what I chose: price to NAV, and we actually internally calculate our own NAV on the shares in the GDX. And what you can see here is really a pretty massive derating of the shares. You know, starting from 2008, 2010, the last financial crisis, and then since 2016, a slight revaluation coinciding with actually a good performance from the gold equities, but nowhere back to prior levels. Now, if you look at other metrics, and I just wrote a note to myself here, you know, PE or price to cash flow, you know, from 1985 to 2009, 2010, basically an average, you know, mid-teens at least, and then now is you know, well below 10 times. So on that metric too, there's been a derating, and you know, other metrics such as market cap per ounce of reserve adjusted or divided by the gold price as well show the shares to be rated. Now the why this happened was because companies have become highly levered, production costs had risen rapidly during the early 2000s, and there was really a lack of profitability at the time of the peak gold price in 2011. So the companies, basically, the cost of production was equal to the run in the gold price, and meanwhile, many of the companies had taken on a lot of debt. So it was they deserved to be derated. And that's exactly what happened. We think it, you know, has now gone too far, and we sense a little bit of a reversal in that. You know, debt levels have been cut, costs have been brought under control. There's been no increase in the cost of production for the last 5 years. So at least 5 years, 2013, I think. So you know, costs are stable, the gold price up, margins are up, balance sheet's been repaired, yet. The general equity market has been revalued, yet we don't believe this has happened for this sector. Now the blue sky or the fantasy here is that if there's a perception in the market that the gold price is on an extended bull market, or if the gold price or if gold might be reintroduced into the financial architecture, or there may be you know, some sort of reintroduction of gold, then I think the discount rate that the market puts on future earnings will decline, or another way, the multiples on current earnings will go up, and the sector could be revalued, you know, quite substantially. So the sector will become sort of a short duration asset into a much longer duration asset. So you know, that's, you know, we'll see how that goes, but there's the potential for that should gold, you know, be seen as playing a more important role going forward. In which case, I mean, reason being, then the downside is limited, and there'll be sort of optionality for owning these gold for owning the gold shares. But you know, we'll see how that goes. Next slide. Thanks. Just to highlight that you know, we said that the gold price is now above where it was at its peak in 2011, but the gold stocks, as represented by the XAU index, are still 35% below. You know, we think the companies are in much better shape. Yes, there's been share issuance and some production declines, but adjusted for that, we think there's a much cleaner, better story in the gold equities now. So yeah, 35% below their high. And just to highlight, this is a tiny sector. The market cap of the XAU index, when I looked last, I think it was on Thursday, 3rd of September, was about 290 billion. Now there are a few more. There are a few gold shares that aren't in that index, but that's basically, you know, the gold universe. And JP Morgan, by comparison, had a market cap of 350. So this is a tiny sector. Obviously, you know, very underowned by definition. Next slide. You know, I've talked for a rather long time, so maybe I'll just go through this in you know, pretty quickly. You know, we're bottoms up fundamental investors. We invest across all market caps and on a global basis. We really look for three things in a gold equity, and that is the underlying assets, you know, the quality of the company's mines, basically. Management. This is a tricky industry. Many small companies. So, you know, we like to follow, get to know,
managers, and then the third leg, of course, is valuation. And I just mentioned that we do a primary valuation tool is NAV on a sort of NAV basis for, you know, we take NAV of each mine, each company, and then assign a valuation to that. And this slide really just gives me an opportunity to talk and you know, to highlight, you know, a couple of the stocks that we own and how we think about things. In, you know, in terms of the first example, Barrick Gold, this was not really, it's a very small holding in the portfolio. There was really no growth. They made some poor acquisitions and sort of lost their way. But Randgold Resources was the largest position in our portfolio. We had followed the manager of that company, Mark Bristow, for many years. And then Barrick, 18 months ago, ended up taking over Randgold Resources, and Mark Bristow became the manager of Barrick. And so so that was an all-stock transaction, and we ended up being a lot, you know, Barrick being a big position in the portfolio. And he has turned around Barrick, paid down debt, cut costs, and really put them back on track. And one of the major things he did was created a joint venture with Newmont for Newmont and Barrick's Nevada assets. And he's done a, you know, number of other things. So that's, you know, following a manager who's delivered. Newmont was a portfolio holding along with Goldcorp. Newmont ended up buying Goldcorp, and we believe, you know, we're big fans of the Newmont management, even though they've got a new manager, Gary Bilbo's left, and now Tom Palmer's the CEO. They both came out of RTZ. They've been at Tom Palmer's been at Newmont for a while. They would think they'll succeed in rationalizing, improving Goldcorp's good assets. Alamos, we ended up with holding Alamos through Orica and Richemont, two companies, two small Canadian companies that had very good assets in Canada. And, you know, we think that, that'll work out well with Alamos, who also had a mine in Mexico and Turkey. And then finally, just very briefly, Massawa was an asset of Randgold's that really wasn't big enough and hadn't been developed enough for Randgold to make an investment decision on. It's based in Senegal. But after the Barrick merger, it just wasn't clearly not important enough to be developed by Barrick, which is a much larger company following its takeover of Randgold. And, you know, we were led to believe that, Teranga had the fourth company, put the fourth list there. Teranga had an opportunity, had a mine very near to Massawa, about 40 kilometers away, and they bought the Massawa mine from Barrick. And that really is a huge opportunity for Teranga, and that's been one of our more successful portfolio holdings. Next slide. I manage the Gabelli Gold Fund in their classes. Here's just a snapshot of the portfolio as at the end of June. Next slide, please. Again, here are our top 10 holdings and the geographic breakdown. And again, just to show you that it's really an all-cap strategy. We don't really focus on the exploration stocks, but rather companies in development and production. Even so, 30% of the portfolio is in companies with a market cap of less than 3 billion. Next slide is performance. This is sort of busy, and I don't expect you to pay too much attention, but just a couple of points. The column which says earliest common inception, that's the start date of the GDX. Now, the GDX is the unmanaged gold equity ETF managed by, administered by VanEck. And, you know, since then, it's very small type, but that started on the 15th of May, 2006. So we have managed to add value to the unmanaged ETF, and you know, that's very important to us. I know it looks very small, but it's 3.4 against 0.4. And the second point from that right hand scale is that the gold price has outperformed our returns, or the gold, Kibeti Gold Fund's returns, 7% to 3.5%. And, you know, we think, we hope, I very much hope that, we're in, you know, the industry is set up now where gold shares will do better than gold bullion. So it's been a horrible decade up to about 2016, more than a horrible decade, and we hope that's passed. And, you know, we think there's been change, and, you know, time will tell. But certainly in the last 5 years, we have done better than the gold price. And if we're right about the valuation of these stocks, and if the gold price, or should the gold price stay at current levels or move ahead, you know, I think there'll be plenty of opportunities in what is still, you know, very, very small sector of the equity market. You know, thank you so much. I just should, you know, leave you with just a couple of takeaways. You know, one is, you know, negative, you know, real rates, I think, are important driver for gold. And second, very low 10-year treasury yield of whatever it is, 65 basis points, means that the role of treasuries in a diversified 60-40 portfolio is diminished, because there's just simply much less room for yields to fall on government bonds. And we think this may be a driver for asset allocators to maybe put a little bit more emphasis on gold. So we do think there is an increasing role for gold in a diversified investment portfolio. And on that note, thank you so much for listening. And if you have any questions, you know, I'll try and answer them. Thank you.
All righty. So at this point in time, we can go ahead and jump into our Q&A section. I believe the plan is for Chris to go ahead and pass these questions over to Caesar for us. Looks like we do have some stacked up, Chris, so we should be good to go to jump on into them.
Thanks. And thank you, Caesar. It was a great presentation. A couple of questions here. What do you think about the gold mining company Kirkland Lake Gold?
Yes, I mean, you know, we're very positive on that company. It is, you know, it's one of our top 10. It's about a 4.8% position in the portfolio. We were big, you know, reasonably important, significant shareholders in Detour, which Kirkland Lake purchased. You know, we think there's plenty of opportunity for a better capitalized, larger company to take hold of that very large mine and improve on it. And in fact, today, of course, Kirkland Lake had an announcement of drill results from Detour. So I think that's a terrific opportunity.
Great. Why is Dundee Precious Metals so undervalued? Low reserve life, difficult metallurgy, political risk?
Yeah, I think all of the above. I mean, I'm not sure I've got a really good answer for that. But you know, I think they took a long time developing their Bulgarian assets. People, you know, Bulgaria is not exactly known for gold mining, and their mines there had some base metals involved, which made the metallurgy a little tricky, which they seem to have solved. So I think it's just fallen under the radar screen. And also Dundee, you know, I think actually the name maybe as well caused it maybe not to be, you know, not to get the valuation. Dundee's investment advisor in Canada, an investment bank, and maybe there was just, you know, some feeling of an association, you know, between the organizations. So, you know, it takes time, but, you know, we think that's, you know, inexpensive. And it's not a, you know, huge, holding in our portfolio. It's about a 70 basis point position, but it's an example of what we believe to be an undervalued opportunity in the small cap area.
Great. How is your NAV calculated, of the equity precious metals companies?
Yeah. I mean, Chris, you know, is obviously better able to answer this than I am, but he goes company by company
and takes cash flows generated by the mines and discounts that, you know, after tax and after capex from the technical reports, and then discounts that by 5% to get an NAV for the company. And then really we put a multiple on that based on qualitative judgments on political risk management, the opportunity to grow the asset.
Great. Is it a cool?
Sorry.
Are you going to keep going, Caesar?
Yes.
Is it a coincidence that the GLD ETF became competitive liquid investment alternatives to gold equities, hence a lower gold price to NAV?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and absolutely, yeah, I think that's absolutely right. But that was much earlier on. I mean, I have to be reminded when the gold GLD, that was, you know, very, that was, that resulted in the derating, and the, but then the larger derating, I think, took place after 2010, 11, 13 time when it had been established. But you're absolutely right. It was, you know, prior to that, investors looked to the gold equities and then they had an alternative gold bullion. So yes, absolutely. I think that led to a derating in the gold shares. That's a great point. Thank you.
Among gold equity companies, which one is your favorite?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that. I mean, among my children, which one is my favorite? You've got to be tricky. But well, you know, all I can say is that that, you know, our two large positions are Newmont and Barrick. I mean, they're lower risk, and you know, they have a diversified group of mines. But you know, certainly other names that you know I'd like to talk about are Endeavour, which we've been, you know, adding to recently, EDV in Canada, the Teranga, you know, that we like a lot. Silver, Wheaton Precious is our favorite streaming and royalty company. So other ones that we've been sort of adding to include Osisko Gold Royalties. You know, we think there's an opportunity in that. We've, you know, added to our position in that. But, you know, Kirkland Lake, I think is a terrific opportunity, you know, right now, today. You know, that had been hit and it never really, you know, recovered much in the run up. But then just recently it hasn't been hit. So, you know, I think Kirkland Lake is, you know, a fine, you know, very good opportunity, strong balance sheet, good assets in the right geographies, namely Canada and Australia.
Copper seems to have beaten gold substantially in the last year or so. Do you have an opinion on this?
Well, this is a gold fund, and you know, we really want to focus our clients' assets on gold equities. You know, gold is a monetary asset, and that's what we're interested in. Now, some of the gold companies also produce copper. But very few. So, for example, we don't own Freeport, which is, I'm sure, a fine investment, a wonderful copper producer. They have the Grasberg mine, which is probably one of the premium copper gold mines, if not the, in the world. But it's not a portfolio holding of this fund.
Is the Gabelli Gold Fund available as a mutual fund and ETF, or just a mutual fund?
Yeah, it's just a mutual fund.
Do you think that Bitcoin and cryptocurrency change the focus from gold and can be one of the reasons for gold companies doing so poorly?
I think the reason for gold companies doing so poorly was sort of self-inflicted, where they made a mad scramble for growth in the last up cycle and took on a lot of debt. And couldn't deliver, and costs rose significantly. Actually, I was looking today at that from the early 2000s, you know, when the cost was 300 something, it went up to well over 1,100 or something by 2011. So they received none of that margin, and then got punished. So I think it was mostly self-inflicted. But yes, I mean, you know, I think there was, you know, a sense that here was another alternative, so outside the banking system, so yeah, I'm sure Bitcoin did have an impact, but I don't think a major impact.
Why do you think Galiano Gold is underperforming?
I mean, we don't own that in the portfolio, and so I'm not even sure if it has underperformed. It owns half a mine in Ghana with Goldfields. It's I think very inexpensive, but I'm not fully up to date with that situation. But my sense is that mine is generating cash. They've got exploration opportunities, you know, around their current mine, and I think they're extending the life of the mine. I'm sure that's an opportunity. I mean, it is a small cap. Some of the small caps have been overlooked, and as I said, it just has has a joint venture in their mind with Goldfield.
Okay, is it better to? Do you think it's better to do an acquisition without leverage, like Kirkland Lake Gold did, or a levered acquisition like Barrick Gold?
Well, we don't believe in leverage in the resource sector. Well, I don't. When you don't have control of your revenue, of your top line, I don't think that debt is is helpful. You know, when you have a very stable top line, then it's easier, more conducive to taking on debt. Now, I understand that might be counterintuitive in a very low interest rate environment, but traditionally, historically, resource companies don't use debt, and I think there's a good reason for that. And I think, you know, to the extent that the gold company managements have a historic perspective, they'll be reluctant to use debt in the current environment.
Do you own any Argonaut Gold in your portfolio?
No.
Okay. What's your take on IAU? The IAU ETF for gold exposure, how much gold portfolio percentage should one have in an entire portfolio?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer, but I mean, you know, that two things, gold bullion is just currency, it's just money, that's it. No risk, and it should maintain its purchasing power. Gold equities are an investment. There's room for growth. There's room for disappointment. There's room for income. And so, you know, your risk tolerance. So gold allocation could and should really contain both. I mean, the volatility and expected return on the equities, despite what's happened, should be higher. So if you're having just a gold equity exposure, it should be a smaller exposure in my opinion. But I mean, it needs to be big enough to mean something, but not so significant that something bad happened, you wouldn't benefit from the rest of your portfolio. So, you know, 5, 10, 12%, maybe 15%, nothing.
Okay. When you analyze a gold company, what's the most important financial analysis parameter?
Well, I think the most important financial parameters is really their margin after all their costs. It's probably the most important. Because it's what, you know, cash operating costs they're about 80% of the story. But a gold company or any resource company is a declining asset. So you've always got to be thinking about how much is it costing the company to replace their reserves, to grow their reserves. So you need to factor in that margin for maintaining
you know, maintenance capex and then what I call maintaining the reserve capex.
Okay. What is your net margin percentage?
Well, I mean, that varies company by company. I don't have it on a portfolio basis. And but, you know, margins, of course, have exploded for the sector, you know, as the gold price has risen and costs have stayed static.
Okay, great. Caesar, if there's any final comments you have, it looks like that's all the questions that we have here.
Great. I mean, there's, you know, we got a comment or question rather on you know, how we value the companies when we go through mine by mine. You know, what we've done since about September 2016 is to really plot our NAVs on what we think the companies are worth relative to the gold price. And actually, I just ran that chart today, and they're showing that the gold equities are undervalued relative to the gold price. I mean, not as much as they were back in March, but you know, only basically three other times in the last few years that they've been this cheap. Once in 2018, and then back in a couple of times. Well, once in 2019. So there isn't much euphoria, in our opinion, in the gold equities, despite, you know, what some would consider to be a good, you know, a good absolute performance, you know, in the last year and year to date. I mean, the gold price has done more than what the gold equities have done according to our work. And on that basis, I'd like to thank you, you know, very much for allowing me the opportunity and the firm the opportunity to talk about, you know, our approach to this sector. And as I said, please contact my colleague Chris Mancini with anything unfavorable, and come to me if you've got any favorable comments. Thanks very much.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this episode of Value Investing Live. If you haven't joined one of our live streams before, check us out on YouTube and register for the events on gurufocus.com. If it's your first time hearing of us, click the link in the bio for a free 7-day trial of Guru Focus, where you can test out all of our great tools and features. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.